Such a beautiful day. God has truly blessed us with this wonderful opportunity to be here. And I hope we all know that. We believe that. We feel the blessing that God has given us for this opportunity to gather together in His name. I know we got a lot of people that are sick, a lot of people in the hospital, those that we care about. There's a little bit of a sickness going around. We got some folks traveling. So I know the entire family's not here, but we're grateful that you're here, and again, the visitors among us, thank you for being here. Well, we're happy that you're here, and we want you to know that it encourages us that you made that decision to be here among us. This morning's lesson is a type of lesson that I don't do very often, and maybe I ought to change that. And it's a different format than I usually do. And of course, we all have politics on our minds. And I always say I believe it's beneath the dignity of the pulpit for a preacher to get up and say, vote for this, don't vote for that, vote for this party, that party, this politician, or the other. I think we've got a higher standard than that. But as a minister of the gospel, I believe that it is my duty to exhort and admonish concerning moral stances, right? And so that's what we're going to examine this morning here. And I want to start off a little bit different than I normally do, just to get us thinking in a certain direction. So here's a summary of what a well-known history and anthropology professor, and then another fellow, Yuri Bezmenov, in kind of a summary of what they wrote. They said, the forces of destructive ideology have overtaken our culture, government, and churches, and here's how they've done it. Number one, they demand access, which sounds reasonable, right, if you're a good person. Well, yeah, that sounds reasonable. And they, you know, at first, it doesn't seem like you have to compromise on anything. Right? You have to compromise on anything fundamental by allowing access. Now, number two, they demand accommodation. Here's where it gets real dangerous. It's not enough that the men, now they want to be treated different. Right? This is where they want to be treated the way that they want to be treated. Third, they demand a seat at the table. Right? And they say, you know, the reason we're getting treated bad is because we don't have a voice at the table, if you will. And then number four, once they got a seat at the table, they put all their effort into getting more seats at the table, right? They demand then control of the table, demanding control of the entire institution, whatever it might be. And we're talking in generalities here, right? Number five, then they demand that you accommodate their ideology, right? They demand that you accommodate their politics. They demand that you not make the changes that they want for the loudest 1%, and sometimes even less than that. And so the real problem begins with accommodation, right? Because the moment you're willing to significantly alter the reason for the organization's existence, right, the way that it operates, you change the paradigm, right? At that moment, then they know, they realize they got you where they want you, right? And this process, I want us to see this morning, is how those who worship Baal and Molech have infested our institutions, our companies, our halls of power, the judiciary, the government, all of it, the churches. This is how they do it. This is how they have done it. Right? And this has everything to do with what the modern American Christian voter needs to know. And sadly, we haven't been standing up to this process. You know, the preacher at the congregation we worshiped at last week in Washington said something I liked. He said, Americans have presidents, Christians have a king. And I would like to add to that truth, as we're thinking about this topic this morning, that when people forget that truth, they seek the wrong things, they support the wrong things, they accommodate the wrong things, they seek the things of this world, not the things that are eternal. So let's talk about the politics of Baal and Molech. Now, Baal was a god worshipped. As much as we can tell, the earliest was this ancient god from the land of Canaan before the Israelites got there. And of course, it was a creation of the minds of man, mainly to get away with what they wanted to do, right? To justify just about any sinful thing that you can think of. And so when you think about the Baals that folks back then and still today worship, there were specific Baals, right? But Baals is just kind of a general term for pagan gods, right? Like Molech was a death Baal. And we'll talk about Molech more toward the end of this lesson here. And so Baal appears 90 times in the Old Testament Hebrew Bible, right? The priest of Canaan, Baal is mentioned numerous times, most prominently here in 1 Kings, right? And you know, a lot of people believe that Jezebel's attempt to introduce the worship of Baal, specifically 1 Kings 18, this was the first time in a broader sense that the Baals were really being pushed upon the Israelites. And, you know, this is where, of course, you get the contest between Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal, right? You get this showdown here. God shows his power over the prophets of Baal. You had all of that going on. You know, there's a lot of different references, mainly in the First Kings, to the Baals. And, you know, part of their worship is lighting incense to the Baal they're worshiping and saying prayers to the Baal. The prophets of Baal would put on special garments or vestments. And by the way, in Matthew 12, kind of a side note, interesting. You know, when Jesus cast out some demons, the Pharisees said he was doing it by the power of Beelzebub. We know that event. Who's Beelzebub? Well, it's Beelzebub is what it is, right? And that literally meant the Lord of the Flies, right? So this worship of the Baals, of these pagan gods, was around for a very long time, even before Jesus. And Jesus had to deal with these folks that believed in that. So in a place like 2 Kings, we read about the Philistine god of Ekron. That's a Baal. Now, I want you to think about Baal worship and for a moment here, think about, you know, why was it so popular? Why did it gain such traction? Go to Numbers, the 22nd chapter, if you will. I think a lot of people think about Baal worship as some otherworldly practice that never happens today, and that's just not true. And so in Baal worship, and there's different cultural variations of it, it still happens today, but we'll talk more about that. Human nature hasn't changed. It's still the same today as it was 3,000-4,000 plus years ago. Only thing that's changed is technology. And so I want you to note that here as we consider this topic here. What you would have in Baal worship, I'm hearing numbers, is you would usually get a whole bunch of people together, normally on a hill, kind of like a theater, an amphitheater, kind of like on a stage. And you would get all of the people to come in to watch something, to participate in something. And here in Numbers 22 and verse 41, just one example, because we're going to talk about Balaam this evening, and I hope you're here for that. We're going to talk about the politics of Balaam. So you have Balak here, and he's trying to get Balaam, the prophet of God, to curse the children of Israel. And to entice Balaam to do that, he brings him up to the high places. Here in Numbers 22 and verse 41. Hey, Balaam, come check out all these people here. Don't you want to be a part of this? And so there was this appeal to participate in this. And many times it was to observe debauchery and things like that, sinful activities. Right? And you know, we're still enticed today to participate in certain things. So the whole community would come out. And all of the best pagan ideas for success, you know, crops and fertility were promoted, just like a business seminar. Right? The wicked personalities, the promoters and performers, They were respected. They were given a platform to speak to the people, to entice them, kind of like modern rock stars or maybe Hollywood celebrities or well-known personalities and politicians. Some of them were great dancers. Some of them were great musicians. In 2 Kings, the 17th chapter, I want you to note something here. 2 Kings, the 17th chapter. Now, in Baal worship, they danced around the Asherah pole, or translation might say Asherah, right? And the people acted out debaucherous scenes. And they were doing this for the enjoyment of everybody who came. Isaiah 57, Deuteronomy 23, verse 17. Right? All kinds of immorality on display and encouraging people to participate in it, right? Including homosexuality. All combinations of things that are popular today. Nothing's changed but the technology. Now, before we continue here, let me make this statement. I wanted to say it at least 2-3 times during this lesson. Listen, your politics cannot get you into heaven. Your politics will not get you into heaven, but they just might keep you out. I think that's a truth we need to remember as we consider, what is Baal worship then and now? What does that consist of? And you see in this Baal worship, the children were the real losers. Right? So to participate in Baal worship, you had to reject your children, you had to reject family, you had to reject Jehovah God. But there's this great enticement to be a part of it. And it was a strong pull to be involved in it. Baal worship, in reality, corresponds, I'm here in 2 Kings 16, corresponds to exactly the activities that people freely participate in today. But nothing's changed, just the technology. Right? And many, most I would say, do so without even truly understanding the nature of idolatry. And idolatry is basically, it's simply the enjoyment of things that are raised up against Christ. And then they vote accordingly, and then they accommodate accordingly. Now, the people that were involved in Baal worship, they did so, they loved the excitement. They really enjoyed it, right? They loved the liberty and the business that they gained from it. Matter of fact, the guilds demanded that you participated in Baal worship. If you wanted income, if you wanted a job, you wanted employment, you wanted to do business, you better participate in the Baal worship. And if you don't, no business for you. Know what? As a matter of fact, you need to contribute to it. Matter of fact, if you don't support it, you can't be a part of anything, right? That's aka cancel culture today. You better support it or else. It's nothing new. Humanity is the same. Just technology has changed. What do you think with Ahab and Elijah? That was cancel culture. Oh, you don't want to support the Baals, right? Well, then let's get after him. And then they go on to try to kill him. Right? Nothing's changed. Just technology. Right? It was all tied up with the rules of doing business, like a modern-day HR, human resources, right? Diversity, equity, inclusion. You better support it or else that's your job. Nothing's changed. And so then we accommodate, and it grows, and it grows, and it grows. And listen, when you read about all of this, from ancient idols to archaic names, to battles over territories that no longer exist. The Old Testament is filled with stories that sometimes seem irrelevant to us today. However, even though human civilization has changed greatly over the past millennia, human nature has not changed. And upon closer analysis, we can find lessons that are surprisingly relevant to us today. Go back, if you have your Bible, to 1 Samuel 5. I want you to note something here. 1 Samuel chapter 5. And this is the part, if you don't remember anything about a lesson, right? I'm not naive. I know a preacher, some of you like to think everybody remembers everything, right? I know that's not the case. But if you can remember anything about this lesson, it's going to be this in the next minute or so. So 1 Samuel chapter 5 to about chapter 7, Israelite Philistines go to war, Philistines win, Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant, there in Ebenezer, and they bring it to Ashdod. And they put it in the temple of Dagon, and that was their Baal, one of their Baals that they worshiped, the god Dagon. And so if you read, especially chapter 5, you know, the first 7 to 10 verses there at least, we don't have time to read it all, where God shows his sovereignty over this Dagon and these people, and he strikes the people with tumors. Right, and he keeps knocking down the statue of Dagon, right, and they put it back up, and God knocks it back over. And so they come to this point, basically, and they realize, wow, this God of the children of Israel, he is powerful. He's a real God. And he's got power over our God, Dagon. Now, you would think, as you're reading this text here, you would think that what you might expect them to do, you know, they didn't think it was contradictory. They didn't think it was irrational. To put the Ark of the Covenant, the God of the Israelites, with their pagan god Dagon in the temple. They didn't think, maybe we ought to start following this Jehovah God. They didn't think, maybe our God doesn't have any power. Maybe we ought to change gods. They didn't think that at all. They didn't think it was strange to put Jehovah God in the same temple as their pagan god. They believed, they clearly believed that both gods had power. And a matter of fact, it wasn't uncommon for certain groups of people to fear the gods of their enemies. And, the Old Testament is actually filled with stories of people fearing other gods, right? Gods that they didn't worship. And so it didn't seem like a problem to believe in multiple gods at once. That didn't seem irrational to them. And so when Jehovah God here shows his might, it came as no surprise, no revelation to them. They didn't say, oh no, we've been worshiping the wrong God all the time. They more basically thought, well, can't this Jehovah God and Dagon, can't they just get along? Why can't I just have them both? You see, the problem is, what I really want you to remember from this lesson here, this example that we see here, these folks didn't say, I need to turn to the God of Israel. But rather, they tried to make the two coexist in one temple, which was impossible. You start to see the problem here? They tried to do that, and when that didn't work out, God kept striking the image of Dagon. Right? They had to send the ark away because they couldn't give up Dagon. Dagon was their god. He was their Baal. Even if he was shown to be powerless, right? They couldn't let him go. And this sounds a lot like what we do with our modern-day idols. Right, we're not getting wood and stone and carving or chiseling out little idols to put on the mantle and bowing down and worshiping. No, we're more sophisticated than that. We're not like these archaic people. Right, we have our gods, but they're pride and ambition and wealth and success and relationships, and we bow at the altar of government. Those are our idols among many. And what do we try to do? We try to make the gods that we've created to coexist with our God, with Jesus, in the one temple. And it doesn't work that way. These are the politics of Baal. Right? Sometimes the problem is we create something and lift it up and make it God, or we try to take Jehovah God and bring him down to our level and make him into something else. It just does not work that way. You start to see the problem. You start to see the politics of Baal and Molech. It's kind of like being a Christian while also trying to pursue worldly pursuits. It's kind of like being a Christian and hanging on to our wealth, our mammon. It's kind of like trying to be a Christian while treasuring grades and GPA and success in the eyes of men, and it doesn't work. It's kind of like trying to be a Christian and supporting godless politics. Your politics will not get you into heaven, but they just might keep you out. Look here in 1 Samuel, the 7th chapter. I want you to read this with me. 1 Samuel, Right? And here's the thing, and it was with the children of Israel here, and we do the same thing. Now, when it doesn't work out many times, instead of getting rid of the Baal, the idol, we just turn away from God. I can't give up my Baal of whatever, my God that I've got. I can't get rid of that, so I'll just walk away from God. Because we become too entrenched in our worship of these idols. It's too hard to give them up. So here in 1 Samuel 7, 3 and 4, we read, "Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, if you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths from among you, and prepare your hearts for the Lord and serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines." So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtoreths and served the Lord only. Now an Ashtoreth was basically a female version of the Baals. And so I think it's interesting here, it mentions they served the Lord only, implying that before that, they didn't think that they were not serving God while serving these pagan idols. Right? They just thought they could do them both. Right? They didn't see themselves as having turned away from God. They thought they were still serving God while serving these other idols. Right? A Baal normally was a god of the weather. Right? It could bring good harvests and wealth. That's hard to give up. You know, and the Ashtoreths was the goddess of love and sex. But when Samuel told them to return to God, the people realized that these cannot coexist. Remember, Jesus says, Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, verse 24, you can't serve two masters. Because that's exactly what we try to do with the politics of Baal and Molech. And then we accommodate. We accommodate things that are destructive. Right? These gods, they still exist today, but in different forms. Human history repeats itself over and over and over again. And again, you know, in the past, the ancients worshipped, carved images that represented the depraved and dark side of man, where the physical idols represented the ideas behind Baal worship. Today's Baal worshipers are, more sophisticated, right? They don't need the physical idols. They've simply bypassed the idols representing the ideas to worshiping the ideas themselves. Right? And again, just because I don't bow down to a carved image, a literal idol, doesn't mean that the concept still doesn't exist. Numbers 25, Baal worship simply represents the dark and depraved side of humanity. Anything dark, anything depraved, there's a Baal for it. For example, Baal Peor here, Numbers 25, right, represented the sexually depraved inclinations of people. Right, so there's a Baal for that. Molech, well, it's a death Baal. That's a Baal for sacrificing children. So the more depraved, the more dark, the more fleshly in nature, there's a Baal for that. Verses 1 through 13, if you're taking notes, Numbers 25, 1 through 13. Right, is perhaps the most foulest aspect of society's bent towards the dark and the depraved side of humanity. Right, and so following Baal is very tempting. It's very seductive, right? Because it's enticing our base nature, our carnal fleshly desires. Right, men are naturally attracted to Baal worship, and that's why the Bible continuously warns against it. So let's spend a moment here and talk about what is the appeal of Baal worship. Simply this, it takes energy to move against gravity, right? You got to work at it. It takes no effort, therefore, to slide down. Since gravity naturally pulls us down, right? Baal worship is like spiritual gravity. But that pulls us down with no effort. Right? Matthew 7, verse 13, that's the broad way, the easy way. Baal is like descending into a dark and dingy basement of a high-rise building. Right? While the penthouse in the same building is like following God's path, which is leading man upward. But it takes work. Matthew 7, verse 14, this is the narrow way. This is the difficult way. Baal worship is us not doing anything and just giving in to whatever feels good. That's Baal worship, because there's a Baal for whatever you want to do. But you see, with God, the hard thing for us is He's got a standard, He's got precepts, He's got commands, right? And He says, I love you, here are some boundaries, don't go beyond this. This will keep you safe physically and spiritually. But you got to work at it. It's hard, it's difficult, it's narrow way. It's not easy. Matter of fact, it's really, really hard. And you got a choice. If you give up, that's Baal worship. Just whatever feels good to you. So what's appealing with Baal worship? Let's answer this question with a question here. What's appealing to human nature? Whatever you come up with, that's the appeal of Baal worship, right? Well, that's what Adam and Eve dealt with in Genesis 3 and verse 6. To serve Baal is to serve the lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life, 1 John 2, 15 through 17, right? So Baal is to do whatever feels good and ignore the consequences. That's the appeal. Baal also, just a couple of things here, side note, involves worshiping of the creature rather than the creator. That's why we had our scripture reading earlier from Romans 1. You know, every year, April 22nd, since 1970, we got Earth Day, right? And it's turned more and more and more, you know, maybe it started with good intentions. Let's be good stewards of the environment. And we ought to be as God's people. It is sinful to not be a steward of God's creation. But it's turned into this worship where the animal and the environment, they're more important than human life created in the image of God. And so part of it becomes nihilism, right? And nihilism is nothing matters, no standards. You know, if it feels good, do it. That's how Satan works. If it feels good, do it. That's Baal worship. That's the politics of Baal. Politics of Satan. Nothing matters. You know, we're just going to die and go on to nothing. So eat, drink, be merry, live however you want. And there's an appeal to that. There's an appeal not to care about anything. And we don't care, there's no consequences. Do it because it feels good. You know, and that warning that we have in Romans, the first chapter. Listen, the domination of Baal worship in our modern secular society is evidenced in no greater way, now hear me on this, than society's all-out war on anything biblical. Right? I'm not telling you something you don't know. Right? While at the very same time, society gives a pass and even promotes any heathen religion or heathen philosophical belief system, but not anything of the Bible. Right? Baalism, you know, the more unbiblical, the more perverse it is, the more satanic, the more sexually deviant, the better. Right? And the forces of Baal dominate every public institution in America, which is why they're in continuous this constant engagement of all that war against anything that has to do with Christianity. And you wonder where it comes from. How did it start? This is it. You don't have to wonder anymore. Right? This is the politics of Satan, politics of Baal and Molech. We're just accommodated for too long. Right? So we need to be there and not be naive. I'm going to pick up the pace here. You know, so let's talk about standing against idolatry, Baalism. Now, we understand there's three basic tenets of Baal worship: child sacrifice, sexual immorality, and the worship of the creation, of animals, the environment. That's three basic tenets. Nothing's changed in all of humanity. Nothing's changed but the technology. I can worship Baal in complete comfort, air conditioning, leather sofa, surround sound, massive flat screen TV. I can worship, but nothing's changed. Nothing's changed but the technology. And when you think about child sacrifice to the Baal of Molech, the death Baal, you know, 10 times more babies are killed in comfortable, air-conditioned abortion clinics than the Nazis ever dreamed with the Jews in the Holocaust. And we overall just don't care anymore. We've become comfortable with it. Sexual immorality, just staying here in Romans 1, right? Second tenet of Baal worship, our culture is immersed in immorality, so much so we don't even notice it anymore. We don't even give it a second look anymore. And the next wave of wickedness comes in the form of transgenderism, right? Children are being dressed up as the opposite sex or being paraded in gay pride parades. We're arguing about if a man could dress like a woman and go into women's spaces. And we're allowing sexually immoral people access to our children. And we're allowing drag queens to read books in publicly funded schools and libraries. That's Baal worship. That's a tenet of Baal worship. Forgetting the Creator again. Yeah, in verse 25 here. Absolutely, we're to be a steward of God's environment. But the secular atheists have taken that and lifted it up to, as being a Baal, and that's more important than human life. And we could talk about each of these for probably hours. You know, Jesus knew all about the Baals. And one thing here before we begin to wind down in just a moment, there's a lot of different Baals. You know, so much so that, you know, it seems like the New Testament, the biggest Baal that Jesus was talking about and the apostles was the Baal of mammon, right? Of money, of things, right? That's just as deadly. And so we've lifted up stuff and things of money, and that's been this God that we've started to worship. We see that in Luke, the 16th chapter. Let me just read here for the sake of time. Let me jump ahead. 1 Timothy chapter 6. And this is important here when we go into the last portion of this lesson. So the Bible teaches us that the wages of economic idolatry is death. Right? People, 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9, people want to get rich, Paul declares, fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Right? Because our material possessions so often seduce us into worshiping them like gods. And that horrific passage that we see on the screen from Jeremiah. Right? Jeremiah writes that our worshiping of idols consumes not only our flocks and herds, but our sons and our daughters. I encourage you to go through, especially the first 13 chapters of Jeremiah. And what you see there, our culture, our nation today, it mirrors it in a very scary way because of worship of these things. Right? They turn away from God, and it warns, and then you see the rise of adultery and murder and no respect for people and the elderly and property, and you got this group of people that don't know how to brush anymore, and you have this group of people saying, God help us, but they refuse to repent. And I encourage you to read that and be aware. That's the damage of the politics of Baal and Molech. And that's what we see today in our culture. It's everywhere. And so we sit down and we go, why? Why is this happening? And we wring our hands and we point our fingers. And here's the answer. So let's talk about, in the last couple minutes we have here, the politics of Molech. Molech was basically a death Baal. Right? You see some images here on the screen. And so Molech was basically, they would build an altar, and it was basically what you see there. There's a couple more images. We know this from history. And Molech, you know, made out of metal, would have arms, sticking out like that, and they'd build a fire, get it really hot, red hot. And then they would take their babies, their children, and put it on the arms of Molech as a sacrifice and burn them to death. Repeatedly in Scripture, God condemned this practice. Leviticus 18:21, you shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech, right? And so perform the name of your God, I am the Lord. Now, tragically, you know, Solomon erected a high place just outside of Jerusalem to this god Molech to placate his foreign wives, 1 Kings 11. You know, and we in our modern culture think we're so enlightened, We're so far removed. We're so much better than them. You know, we don't participate in these morally depraved ancient practices. The truth, however, reveals otherwise. Consider here a full-page, we just read a portion of it, full-page advertisement, New York Times. It was published in response to a number of recently passed pro-life laws under the misleading title, I believe, Don't Ban Equality, and it read in part, quote, "It's time for companies to stand up for reproductive health care. Restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health, independence, and economic stability of our employees and customers. Simply put, it goes against our values. It's bad for business." Put more succinctly, I would add to this, if you allow me, restricting abortion, it's bad for business. Or phrased more honestly, abortion is good for business. In other words, abortion must be preserved for the sake of business. Now, how does that sit with you? Maybe there's somebody here that's a Christian this morning, and you know, maybe you support abortion or the politics that support it. Maybe you're not for it, but you're not against it, right? And you have a sense of fair play, right? You know, it's just not fair to restrict abortion, right? And to be as charitable as possible, God's sponsors were trying to address this underlying reality, right? Pregnancy, babies, unequally affect a woman's professional career, and that can't be denied. But is abortion the answer? Justice Anthony Kennedy, in his 1992 majority opinion for Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which upheld Roe v. Wade, wrote, quote, "For two decades of economic and social developments, people have organized intimate relations or relationships and made choices that define their view of themselves and their places in society in reliance on the availability of abortion in the event that contraception should fail, the ability of women to participate equally in the economic and social life of a nation has been facilitated by their ability to control their reproductive lives." In other words, for women to participate equally in the professional world, abortion must be preserved. Now ask yourself this here. You know, what is the underlying assumption in this? Well, what's being held up as the most important thing in this? The thing in which everything else should be sacrificed. It's a person's career. So the assumption is nothing should stand in the way of a person's career, right? That's what he said. It is the highest good possible. Do you believe this? Will you vote like this? Right? How will this affect your vote and what will you support politically? Are our careers the highest good? Isn't that a definition of a bail? Right? The thing before which everything else must be submitted and sacrificed, are careers, are they God? And now you can start to see, if you didn't know, why support for abortion, it's so vigorously defended, right? It protects the bail called career, right? The bail of business, the bail of personal advancement, the bail of profit, the bail of Moloch, the bail of killing children made in the very image of God. Now, both the Times advertisement and the Kennedy decision make this point. Abortion must be preserved for the sake of careers. Children must be sacrificed before Baal, the god of career. And don't misunderstand that. Careers are great things. But careers are terrible gods. Let's go ahead and finish up this morning. Moloch was a horrid god, demanding the lives of his followers' children. An abomination of the worst sort. You know, our culture may not build metal idols in which children are burned to death, but are we really that morally superior? That every year millions of unborn children end up dismembered and discarded as just mere medical waste. King Solomon set up a shrine to Moloch here in 1 Kings in the Valley of Hinnom. You know that word, Hinnom, became the Greek word for hell, Gehenna. How else would you describe landfills filled with dismembered and discarded children, babies? Isn't it any wonder that Scripture repeatedly warns us to be on guard against false gods that destroy us? At its core, this is anti-Roman, because it devalues one of the unique capabilities that God has granted to women, the ability to bear and nurture children. Abortion is a symptom. Molech is a symptom of the problem. The problem is Baalism, Baal worship. In the name of business, you know, that this beautiful and godly capacity is being denied and devalued, and it has to stop. And it has to begin with the church. God calls life good, He calls women good and man good, and children are a blessing to women and men in marriage. A church needs to confess this and to state this with confidence and joy. Creeds are good gifts from God, but they are not God. Right? We have one God, and He's good, and His word is good, and it's for our good. And when we receive it in faith, it's good. It's good for women and men and families and children. Abortion has certainly been good for abortion providers. Planned Parenthood has made millions upon millions upon millions every year. It has nothing to do with so-called pro-choice or women's health, and many times it's wrapped up in innocent words like tolerance. Such nice words to cover the murder of innocent children. Do not fall for the politics of Baal and Molech. Your politics will not get you into heaven, but they might just keep you out. Friends, brethren, I'm going to say it again here, like I said in the beginning. I will never get up and tell someone from the pulpit how to vote, what political party to support. But I am called, I absolutely believe, to exhort and admonish concerning moral issues, moral stances. And so let us glorify God in what we support and what we don't support. Makes all the difference. Let's take a stand. This morning, if you are subject to the gospel invitation, you have an opportunity to obey that this morning. The Bible calls us to respond with a responsive belief and faith, right? I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. It's got to start there with the willingness to love God, love Him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then take action concerning that belief. I believe that. I'm willing to confess that. I'm willing to repent of my sins. Acts 2:38, and then I'm going to reenact the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus in water, immersion. We call that baptism. That's a call for you. That's where it all begins. That's the most important step to begin that journey. If you haven't done that, you have an opportunity this morning. If you've done that and you've fallen away and you want to start over, you want to be reconciled to God, or if you just need help, don't hesitate. Let somebody know, please, as we stand, as we sing.